I'm Russ Tregenza. I'm the audio director and composer at Sumo Nottingham.
Hi, I'm Dexter Pryor, and I'm a senior sound designer at Sumo Nottingham.
So for what will it be now? I guess it's about 4 years. 4 years? We've been working on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which is a asymmetrical multiplayer game that we've developed for Gun Interactive, a very cool publisher based in Kentucky in the States. It's based on the famous film of the same name from the 70s. It's one of the classic horror films of all time. So it was a real honor to be working on something that we care about so much and that people love so much. We learned a lot during the process of making it. It was a learning experience. We're so proud of the results, and it's been a huge success. People seem to really enjoy playing it. So we thought we could just talk about some stuff that we learned during the process, the pros and cons of working in horror and with original IPs, and hopefully just some tips and tricks and thoughts on, in general, in doing horror video games. So Dex has got a load of questions. I guess we'll just chat through and talk about the sound design, talk about the music, and some more general concepts of horror and video games. And yeah, hopefully it'll be interesting and or useful in some way. Dex, take it away, I guess.
Cool, yeah. I guess to kick things off, because I joined the project towards the end. So there are questions that I've got about the sort of how it all started and came to be. So I guess Ross, so when you were first thinking about the sound for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, were there any like key goals like from the offset that you were aiming for?
Yes, I think the first thing I did was, obviously I've seen the film plenty of times. I love horror films anyway, but I just watched it again and again, trying to think about how that could be translated into a video game and like what the difficulties with that were. Something that's very important to the film was the very sort of avant-garde experimental soundscape of both the sound design and the music, which really are a blur in the film, and that is extremely noisy at some points, extremely quiet at others. It's not something you tend to get in video games that much, because when you're doing a film, it's 90 minutes or whatever, there's a narrative flow, you can have a noisy section and then you know it's going to be quiet after. But we didn't have that luxury really, so we needed to think about how do we control when it gets crazy and when it gets quiet and stuff like that. So I think day one, I knew that I wanted to recreate that feeling of the extreme nature of the film and the harrowing nature of it. But also, like, people might be playing this game for, 100 hours a week, and it needs to be enjoyable to listen to and not just destroying their ears for 100 hours, which, would sort of be like if we didn't think about it. So that was the first difficulty, I think, and that drove a lot of the first decisions. And authenticity, I guess, is key. I mean, Gun Interactive had previously made a game of Friday the 13th, and that was brilliantly done in terms of being authentic and true to the franchise, showing love and respect for the franchise and not sort of veering off in weird directions. So I wanted to make sure that we did that for Texas Chainsaw as well, that we showed that we cared about the detail and recreating all those classic sounds.
Yeah, great. And so I guess in those early days, were there any things you did in terms of prototyping, any of these, you're setting out here, you know what your sort of aims and your goals are. Were you prototyping these at the early stages?
Yeah, I think with the beginning of games, there's it's a difficulty with audio that you want the audio to be involved as early as possible. But in terms of like the design of the gameplay and like the gameplay loop and what happens, the designers are in the process of finding that out themselves, and it can be very sort of scattered and basic at the beginning of the project. So I was using that time to try and learn how to recreate the sound of the 70s and some of the sounds you can hear in the film. It's got a lot of like music concrete style stuff where you get like real world sounds mixed in with the music, like in this case like pigs and chains and screams and stuff like that in this weird blur of sound design and music. So I was doing a lot of experiments with like modular synthesizers and things, just running sounds through devices, mangling them and trying to replicate the feel of the film. So not so much like detailed in-game individual sounds at that stage. It was more about, I was just sending like soundscapes and tiny clips of music and things to the people at Gun, seeing if they felt like it was, you know, feeling authentic and feeling like Texas Chainsaw. So that was a process really that took some time to get that 70s tape reel kind of feel to it.
Because it has that kind of aesthetic. So I guess it was a bit of a back and forth between yourselves and Gunn, particularly at the beginning, to land on it. And so I guess because you had the kind of this well-known franchise, well-known horror film, were there any pros and cons for, you know, designing and thinking about, you know, working on this project in terms of sound design?
Yeah, it's it's a sort of a double-edged sword working with like an established IP. Like Sumo Nottingham, we'd previously done Team Sonic Racing, as you know, obviously. And for that it was with Sonic, and it was tempting to try and like change or update or put your own take on some of the key sounds, like Sonic picking up rings and things like that. But that's not what they wanted. That's not what the fans want. That's just, you know, narcissism of like wanting to add your own stamp onto a much bigger pre-existing franchise. So I definitely learned on Team Sonic Racing to just treat the core content carefully and with respect. And I wanted to do the same thing here. So you got things like the chainsaw, the soundtrack, and that overall mood and the feel of the family house and stuff like that. It was a case of not sort of drifting from what that original film was. So I made sure, I tried to watch it about once a week and just make sure I wasn't sort of resting on my laurels or like drifting into an area that's just something I wanted to do as opposed to something, you know, the fans would want to hear, which it's just natural. Like to work on something long enough, you start using like your pre-existing skills and things like that with sound design and music. So you had to be careful that you're not doing that and just resting on your laurels. You had to keep focusing on that central sound of the original IP. So It means you have to be very honest with yourself, and if you're wavering, you have to bring it back into that central line. But it is also nice to have that reference point, so you're not just creating blindly. You do have something that you're trying to emulate, which is nice at times.
Yeah. So pros are you've got the reference material. Cons, you have to sort of, you can't veer too far away from it.
Exactly that.
Cool. Well, I guess just sort of delving a little bit more, like focusing on the sound design itself, and like designing sound for a horror game. I've got a bunch of questions. Hopefully we can talk through them as well. I guess one of the things, like for a horror film, I know that really sort of sets the kind of scene is ambience and ambient sound. So what was the approach there to make it scary?
I'm a huge fan of designing like ambient sounds for spaces and stuff in games. I find it very rewarding and exciting to do. It's a difficulty in that often the spaces that you're designing the sound for are by their nature quite passive. There can be like empty tunnels, empty rooms, things like that. But you don't want to just leave them like that. I mean, you have to use a bit of lateral thinking and a bit of creativity, but if you do so, you can have a living, breathing like pulse to pretty much any environment. As games like, I take The Last of Us, for example, which has got a phenomenal sound design. At times you're just in a room, like an abandoned office, say, and there's nothing in there. There's nothing visually moving. But still, if you listen to the soundscape, it never stops moving. There's distant creaks, moans, sort of bits of wind, bits of dust falling from the ceiling. So that was kind of what I wanted to go for with this. I wanted to make sure that at any given time, even if you're not being chased around by the evil family from our game and you're just hiding somewhere, it doesn't just fall down to silence or anything. There's constant like metal stress of like girders holding up the tunnels, or low moaning wind, or just creaking and howling. And so there's like a real pulse to it. And that was just a case of just layering and layering and layering over years, just adding like endless content, really, just to make sure that every little place was interesting and that told a story. So you could move 20 foot down a corridor and it feels completely different to where you started. Mm. So I'd say for my advice for ambient sound for horror games is just movement, let it breathe, let it feel alive. Even if there's no visual reference, just think about what you can do, what could maybe be happening elsewhere that you can reflect, if there's wind in other tunnels or somewhere in the distance there's a gentle explosion or something. Just do anything you can to give it, breathe life into it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's not to say that you throw so much at it that it's just constant. Exactly. it needs space and room to breathe.
That's a problem I had a lot with, actually. There are a lot of times when I'd be like making a soundscape in the music software, and I think, yeah, that's cool, that sounds really lively and interesting, but it's too alive, and like you put it into the space and it just sounds crazy because you've got too much like very present creaking and like obviously stuff that should be around you and there's no visual reference for it. So it's about, and when that happens, I'll go back and I'll sort of thin it out and be a little more conservative with the sounds until I reach a level that feels appropriate for the environment. That's a good point, that you have to be careful not to go too far in the opposite direction and overpopulate what should be quite a quiet, tense environment.
Yeah. And I guess there's the luxury you have if you're working on a horror film is it's linear. You know when things are going to happen. You can build that tension. So you might not, in a game that's dynamic, know when those moments of, you know, when your player is hiding in the shadows or something, you might not know when those moments to breathe are happening. But the in horror films, they have that luxury. They can the main star is hiding in a cupboard, and then there's some sounds that come out, and then it's not the monster coming out. It's something else. It builds tension. Then it kind of makes you realize, oh, it was fine in the end. Were you thinking about that at all in terms of sound for?
Yeah, it's a real difficulty because our game's completely multiplayer. There's no AI characters in the game whatsoever, so you're dealing with purely human characters moving around doing whatever they want to do. So if you have AI, at least then you can know in terms of like game code and stuff, right, that they've now decided to attack me, and you can make the music and the sound design respond to that. But with human players, they could come charging at you and then decide not to and turn around and leave again for no reason whatsoever. So we made it not so much about responding to like individual one-shot actions that occur, like you say, that you have the luxury of with films and things, but more about dynamic swells of stuff. So if you're getting chased for a certain amount of time, then we start listening to how long it's been you've been in that state of being chased, and we'll start rising up some aspects of the music. Our audio coder Eugene Journey did a lot of work to make sure that If you're being chased, even if they're sort of following you through tight spaces, that we're reading that data and using that data to drive the music and the sounds to swell up. But the thing you can do there is, it's, if you're sort of swelling things up and down, if they do suddenly leave and decide to do something else, we can just curve that back down instead of, so it doesn't feel like a bug or we got something wrong. It just feels like some action was occurring and now that's stopped. So
yeah.
That was kind of where we had to go with a lot of it in the end. It's not so much about bam, this has happened, more of a swell of interesting activity is occurring.
And sort of increasing that intensity as
Yeah.
depending on what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think there have been any moments you're talking about keep making the ambience alive where a large creak of something might the player might think that's something
Yeah.
that's nearby.
Yeah, exactly. That was I really liked my reference for this sort of thing is the game Alien Isolation, where for the first third of the game you don't really encounter the alien from the title, the xenomorph. But you get a lot of like shadows cast on walls and cooling metal and things like that that sound like it running. So there's false positives everywhere that just like designed to scare you and give you a sense of unease and that you're about to encounter this terrifying elements when actually you're safe. So it really messes with people and keeps them feeling scared and on their toes. So I tried to do that with the ambient sound, like all over the place. Like creaking metal will sound slightly like a chainsaw. A lot of the wind in the tunnels has like vocal elements in it, or like pitch down pigs or dogs and things like that. So it feels like something monstrous is about to occur, even when actually you're safe. So the film was really relentless and harrowing, and wanted to make sure that no matter how long you play the game for, it feels like it never lets up, and you never get a moment's peace.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I think I've definitely had those moments in playtests when different parts of particularly the basement it's quite can be claustrophobic in certain spaces and then you think you're in a you're safe and then there's some kind of like generator that's down there that just kicks in and it does unsettle you definitely.
It's fun to mess with people.
Yeah, so I guess kind of moving on from things like the ambient sound, because it's a multiplayer game, there's certain types of feedback that need to players need to sort of respond to. And I guess what considerations were there for the UI sound, UI sounds in the game?
I think the two main concerns, and this isn't really too specific to Texas Chainsaw, this is a general thing that I found through all games I've done over the years. The two things you want for UI sounds are number one, an understandable language, and number two, a clear audio reference to the title you're working on. So in terms of the reference for us, obviously this is Texas Chainsaw. It's all about all this horror and like dirt and grime and weapons and barbed wire, and so I tried to make as many of the sounds as possible out of like wood being hit or wire being stretched or slicey gory knives and things like that. So it's this sort of primal, dirty, muddy metal and wood kind of vibe to it that, it's just trying to reflect the feel of the film and of like the family house where this creepy family live and stuff. So and so that's the same for any title. If you're doing a sci-fi game, same thing. You want to have a language that feels in line with the general vibe of the franchise you're working on. But then the second aspect is understandable feedback and not overdoing it. It's difficult, especially in a title like this. With sci-fi games and things, you have the luxury of sci-fi is very beepy and boopy, and it's kind of expected to hear a lot of like feedback sounds and stuff like that. And normally you have like your sort of headsets on or sci-fi gear that would be beeping anyway. But with this game, I mean, we have just people creeping around tunnels in the 70s and like a cannibal family trying to hunt them down. There's no, you know, there's no walkie-talkies, there's no computers or anything like that. So all of the sounds for notifications and stuff had to feel like they're made out of like natural elements, really. So when you're in game, you never hear any beeps at all that sound like, you know, just sci-fi or synth beeps or anything like that. It's always like wood hits or metal hits or creaks and things like that that provide the feedback. Mm-hmm. So it's a case of finding that sort of naturalistic tone to them, but making it understandable when we're trying to say, like, this is a good thing, this is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a real subtlety to it. UI sounds are incredibly difficult. I think people presume just because it's simple beeps and boops that it's easy to do, but it's one of the most difficult areas, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely. I think, because it has to fit the world, fit that it's, you know, you're playing in. And like you said, providing that feedback that it communicates what it's doing to the player.
Exactly. Any game I've ever done, I've gone through countless iterations of the UI sounds to find a language for them that works. It's difficult. It just takes time and practice. So anybody that's trying to do it, just don't be disheartened if they sound a bit rubbish at first. You just got to keep going, keep layering, and keep trying again and again. You'll know when it's right.
Yeah. And I guess just to say as well, when we're talking about UI sounds, it's not just the kind of menu interface thing, you know, scrolling through menus or anything like that. It's those other can be those other sounds as well, where an ability is ready to use, or you've used an ability, or you can't use an ability, or those kind of things as well.
Yeah, it's a difficulty because sometimes you're conveying pretty, like you say, like very complex points, and it's hard to distill that down into simple positive and negative. But you have to do something because you can't layer UI sounds up too much. It gets really busy and awful sounding very quickly if you allow it to.
Yeah. Well, talking about busy and awful sounding,
where's this going?
Okay, not awful sounding, but it's meant to sound horrifying, is the sound of the chainsaw itself. Now, it's in the title of the game. Any challenges? Designing the sound of the chainsaw. Discuss.
Yeah, the chainsaw was the most difficult bit of sound design in my entire 20-year career. It was incredibly, incredibly difficult to get it right for so many reasons. First of all, the practical idea of it was very difficult because from day one, I decided I didn't want to have like a pre-designed set sounds for the chainsaw. If chainsaws appear in games quite often, they'll just be like a pre-designed short linear sequence of sound, like and then it's done. But I wanted it to be more like a car engine, like in a Forza game or something, where you're actually revving with the controller, just revving the engine, and it was responding like a car engine. It'll be going up and down. And that's very difficult as a starting point. So then on top of that, you got the aspect of authenticity, which it's not even simple in terms of that either, because you have what that chainsaw, which was the Poland 245 or 306 combined chainsaw parts, that actual chainsaw from the 70s, how that really sounds, then how it sounded in the film, and then making it sound cool for a game. Because reality and how things sound in a game, very often completely different. If you hear a sniper rifle in real life versus one in a game, you'll know that there's an expected sound for it in a video game, but is wildly different from the boring sound that it makes in real life. So there was this triangle of sort of disparate things, the reality of that chainsaw, how it sounded in the film, and make it cool for a game. So it was just a case of years and years of iteration until one day it was right. I sent countless versions of it to Wes Kautner, the CEO of Gunn, for him to listen to. And I was very happy that he didn't let me settle for anything less than you know, what it needed to sound like. So again and again, he'll say, it's great, but it's not quite right. And I'd go back to the drawing board and start again. And the final one, he said, expletive, yeah, to me when we finally got it right. And I knew it was right. I knew it was right when I sent him the final one, and I'm still happy with it now. And I would have been distraught to release the game with the chainsaw from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre sounding anything other than right. So yeah. It was worth the hard work.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it was even clear, even on those earlier iterations, that how important in the gameplay it was for when you hear someone is playing Leatherface, and you can hear them revving. There's like a bit of a performance element to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You can hear that the person is trying to, you know, instill fear in the victims they're chasing. And
that was a really important bit of fan service, I think, the ability to, because a lot of people are playing the game for a love of the film, and because they want to be Leatherface. So giving them the option of actually, it's not just press the button and the chainsaws, it's we're actually letting them play with it and rap, 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 and like you say, chase people around and scare them. It was, yeah. I think it added a lot to the fun of being, yeah, big terrifying Leatherface.
Definitely, yeah. And we also wanted it to, the distance that you can hear it from, you want to know roughly how far away the chainsaw is from you, where Leatherface is from you. And I mean it was quite difficult to land on that sound and how it should like travel through the space. And
really was, wasn't it? That was a huge job to, because there's the gameplay feedback component, because it is still while it's a cinematic experience of a game, there is a competitive element to it, and you want to know how far away Leatherface is. So we needed to provide that information to people in a good way, and also we wanted it to be not omnipresent, because it's you don't want to hear it all the time, but basically about two-thirds of the time you should be able to hear it in the distance somewhere, so that you never really feel quite safe. So that took a lot of balancing and a lot of us play testing together and listening to it as an audio team, and finding what that, you know, that sweet spot of, you know, horror and tension.
I mean, like you say, I think where you sort of landed with the chainsaw was, you know, worked really well. And fans of the game love it. And you can see we've watched a few like streams of gamers playing it, and responding really well to using the chainsaw.
Yeah, definitely. People have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. I guess moving on from some of the gameplay side of things, in terms of sound design, were there any other challenges, particularly with, because we've got these cinematic moments in the game, like particularly introing, but then also when, if you get caught by Leatherface with the chainsaw and you're killed by Leatherface, we've got like cinematics. Were there any challenges with those?
It's difficult, because once again, this is a fully multiplayer game. Everyone playing the game in a match is a human player, and those executions were very key to the experience of playing the game. That's when you finally get caught by one of the bad guys, and they do all kinds of like signature gruesome kill moves on you, which usually take about 10 seconds for them to get through. We want them to be as dramatic as possible, but it's difficult because they can be viewed by the killer and the killie, just made up a word, or anybody nearby that happens to be in the area. And so everyone's got like a different perspective of how that event plays out. But I wanted to make sure that if you're one of the two people locked into this cinematic moment, that it feels a bit different and a bit special. So we set up a load of systems that mute a lot of elements that you don't really care about at that moment. Like the music filters down, the ambient sound filters down, and you feel like this weird sort of intimacy of being locked in this scene with just the two people. And all you hear is like the body movements, the foley, the gruesome gore sounds, and then like the grunts and screams of the two characters. So it was the intention right from the beginning was to make it so that in all this chaos of all the stuff that goes around, when this key horror moment finally occurs, there's a kind of horrible intimacy to it, and the world sort of drops away and you're just left with what's happening between these two people. So I think that's quite a nice takeaway for horror generally, like because a lot of horror games can be quite frenetic and a lot going on, a lot of chaos. I think it's nice to try and lock into those moments where something very sort of gruesomely, profoundly intimate is going on between two characters, and just really get some intensity in that. So I think that worked well. It was it's difficult to do, but you get some really memorable moments when you get caught by the killers, and it's really quite gruesome and upsetting.
yeah, I'll say definitely. Yeah. Do you think it affected you, your mentally working on these?
No, I think I was a lost cause before I started.
Yeah. I was just thinking about while you were talking about the kind of the intimacy of those kind of cinematics, not just the executions, the cinematic executions, but as you were talking about that, I realized that there is the cinematics for jumping through the window, which is like an iconic kind of scene within the film. There's a kind of focus drawn to that moment as well.
We did some fun stuff with that and with a few scenes like that, like little mini cinematic moments, because you get sort of more beaten up as you play the game as time goes on. I wanted to like reflect that sort of increasing tension, because everything throughout the course of the game, the music and the sound design, just ramps up, because it's just a slow, steady escalation. So when you jump through the windows and things like that in the games, you'll get a musical sting. And earlier in a match, when you're not too beaten up, it's very subtle. But as time goes on, it gets bigger and bigger and more dramatic. And also the screams from the player, as they're more hurt, we swap them out for bigger and bigger screams. So as the game goes on, there's just this very slow, because a lot of the games can be 10 minutes, even 20 minutes, but there's always this slow, steady escalation of fear and tension. So I think if you're working on horror games, it's good to find a way to sort of like parameterize almost the overall mood of the game, of the tension, and figure out from the beginning of this section to the end, is there some way that I can kind of quantify the fear and the escalation? So for our game, we used we made a parameter, just a number, out of the amount of health left of the four victims that are trying to escape the map. So as their health slowly dissipates from getting hit or jumping through windows, the music and everything escalates in like it's like inversely proportionate to that number. So we've managed to like figure out some numbers that provide us with data that we translate into this very sort of visceral sense of rising tension. So that's definitely a good takeaway for anyone looking to work in horror audio. It's like find ways to quantify the fear if you can, definitely.
Cool. Yeah. Just thinking about some of the other questions I've got lined up, which you sort of like answered there. That there's another aspect before we move on to maybe talking about like the music, which I know you'll want to talk about. So with the we've got a diverse characters in the game, both on the victim side and the family side, and they've all got voiced actors. How did that go?
It's good. It's there's an aspect of games that I've been passionate about for a long time, and I think it's something that some games still need to work on, in terms of it's a missed opportunity not to have those characters speaking and responding to events, because it had such a human aspect to it. So I wanted to make sure that we built systems that allowed them to speak a good amount, to respond to seeing each other and to reacting to things in the world. Like when they see if they see one of their teammates dead on the floor, we don't want them to just go marching over them and carry on, because it's just, it's ridiculous, and it breaks the immersion when they don't react to it. So we spent a lot of time coming up with a big list of events in game that we wanted the characters to react to. And then we gave them all plenty of dialogue, like a random pool of lines they could say when they see each of these things happen, like unlocking a door, seeing the enemy, being scared for a certain amount of time, things like that. But as well as that big pool of dialogue, what I thought was very important and took a bit of work very early in the project was making sure that everybody in the game hears exactly the same line of dialogue. And it might sound like a small thing, but quite often in games, in a multiplayer game like that, each character, if they say something, the game will be picking a random line of dialogue for them. But every single person playing the game will hear a different random line. That's fine in the heat of, like, if it's a huge battle or something. But for our game, it's quite an intimate 4v3 experience. And I wanted to make sure that if two of you are hiding in cupboards in a room, say, and the hitchhiker character comes in and he's like, "Oh, you guys are good at hiding," you guys can talk about it after, about how you both heard him say that creepy line and stuff. So the fact that everybody experiences the same VO in the game meant that it's just much more rewarding, and you've got stories to tell when the match is over that you all share together, which, yeah, I think is very important. And the performances from the actors were great. We made sure that they retained the right mood of, like, tension and fear, and that there was a through line of that for all the dialogue. So it's not a case of this line is them being scared, this line is them being super happy sounding. So if we got if they say a line of like, "Oh my God, how do we end up here?" But then they find a useful object, they don't suddenly go, "Oh great, this is super handy," and we've lost that mood and it's completely broken. Mm. So it's another common problem in games for that mood to be very sort of scattergun. So retaining tension, or at least monitoring their mental state in some way, is a very important aspect of horror games, making sure that they're not all over the place in terms of their emotion, and that there's keeping the dread and the tension throughout.
I guess there's also consideration for if the character is sprinting and that kind of thing, their breath, or they're under some sort of tension, I guess.
That was we did plenty of stuff so that if they're running, that would be one type of breath of the exertion of running. But if they're wounded, or if they're scared, their breath would change to react to that. And again, it's another really overlooked aspect of games that can just the visceral sense of hearing someone's panicky breath, just you respond to it naturally. It's a very visceral human component. So
yeah,
definitely don't overlook all that breath stuff if you're working on horror games. It can be very, very key to instilling fear in the player.
Yeah, and gets across the emotional state of the character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm. Cool. I'm going to skip ahead over a few of the questions that I've got here, just because I think in some way you've actually answered them
and
we talked about them in different places, but we can come back to them if we've got a bit of time. But I'm keen, and I know you are, Ross, to talk about the music. It's really important in our game. So do you want to kick off? I mean, where did it start and how did it evolve for the game?
So like I touched on earlier, the soundscape of the film was almost a blend of music and sound design. Wayne Bell, the composer, would throw in using like reel-to-reel tapes and stuff, just sounds of pigs and chains and rattling metal. And a lot of the times it was just built out of that sort of stuff with like some dread tones underneath. It took me a long time to sort of learn that language, but eventually when I did, that became like the basis that we sort of grew the rest of the music from. We also had the apprehension engine, which definitely check it out. Just Google Apprehension Engine if anybody listens to this and wants to find out about it. It's an amazing handmade instrument that Wes Kautner, the CEO of GUN, had commissioned to be made. And it's just like loads of weird springs and strings and metal, and you strike it or play it with a bow, and it generates real creepy otherworldly noises. So him recording content for me from that was one of the foundations of the soundtrack. So I ended up using content from that, lots of reel-to-reel tape simulation, lots of distortion, lots of echoes and reverbs, and then recordings of screams and pigs, an Aztec death whistle. I had samples of an instrument called a kangling, which is made from a human leg bone, which sounded really cool. And just all these weird disparate elements, but sort of glued together in these sort of waves of noise and feedback and stuff. There's no tempo to the soundtrack whatsoever. It's all textural all the way through, primarily. Few points, there's like design tracks. But so once we had like content to play with, it was a case of figuring out how we can sort of make that into a system that's understandable in the game. And like I said earlier, there's a constant growing swell of dread and tension as you get towards the climax of the game, as more and more of the players die and it gets more frantic. So it became like an XY grid of music, basically. There was the horizontal grid of the music was the slow escalating tension that happens over 20 minutes of just things getting worse and worse. And that happens slow enough that you're not even really aware of it. It just rises and rises as the game goes on. And then on top of that, there was like a momentary element. So that as well as the constant slow increase, if suddenly Leatherface jumps out to you, there's a big sudden spike of music where we had like crashing cymbals and screeching pigs and things like that would just swell up out of nowhere to respond to like those momentary like jump scare almost kind of vibes. And then that would dissipate very quickly, and that would just come in here and there throughout the course of it as like moments of conflict and stuff like that occur in the game. So it's it works nicely in the end. I think this the combination of the slow escalation with the momentary swells mean that it feels like the film, in that you've got moments of quiet and then sudden bursts of absolute craziness. We also checked numbers all the time to see how long it's been since something has happened. So if you've had no contact with the enemy for quite a long time, and you've just been sort of hiding in a field, we let the music slowly swell down to pretty much nothing to let the ambient sound breathe a bit. And then if they suddenly attack you, whoosh, it all comes screaming back in again. So we get that nice contrast the film had, where in the film there'll be often 10 minutes of no music whatsoever, and then suddenly something will happen. It'll go absolutely bonkers. Which again is a nice way to approach horror music for games, because if you're sort of swelling the music up and down, it's not super readable. You want the feedback, but you don't want people to go, oh, now there must be a bad guy in the area, and then when they go, the music goes doo 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 ba cha, and it's gone. And you're like, oh, the bad guy's gone, I'm safe again. Like, we didn't want to give them that comfort blanket, so everything is very sort of smoothed and slow in the way that it responds. So that like maybe Leatherface was after you, but he's left, but you don't get some immediate musical sting that's like, hey, everything's okay again now.
Yeah,
so again, we're trying to keep that harrowing feeling that the original film had.
Yeah, because I guess as well, it's a multiplayer game, and you know, players are doing different things each time you have a different game, and
exactly, yeah.
things can happen anytime. So from that, you know, it's very, very dynamic.
I mean, at any given time there were 20 different parameters live, like, that are following what you're doing in the game and changing the music based on your actions. So every game that you play, the soundtrack sounds different, which is what was our main goal, really.
Yeah, and I think it's definitely works well, like that you mentioned, that general swell of tension. And I know when I've been playing, I remember the first time you dropped in that that music and we were testing it, the music for last victim standing.
Yeah,
so all the other victims that are on your team are they're dead now and you're the last one, and there's this new layer of music that swells in, and you feel the tension. It's
it still freaks me out playing the game. I did a play test this morning and had shaky, panicky hands because of the music.
Cool. I don't really have any more questions regarding the music. I think you really covered it there.
I guess should we just sort of sum up with last advice for horror games?
I think so. Before we do that, I've got a bit of a question just to bring it back to the kind of the beginning where you talked about your goals that you set out from day one. Do you think you achieved those goals, and what went well, any lessons that you learned?
I think we did. I had from day one, I had kind of a sound in my head for how the game, how I wanted it to sound and how that soundscape should be. And it's really there. It's rare to end a project feeling anything other than sort of frustrated that you have to stop at that point and you didn't quite do this, or maybe you should have redone that. But this game has been an unusual one in that you always want to do more, but just very happy with it. I think it does justice to the franchise. I don't think there are any real major negatives during the production of it. There were difficulties for sure. The figuring out the spatial aspects of it, of tracking where people are and when they're behind a wall. We had huge technical difficulties that took us years to get right, but we got them right in the end, which is the important thing. I think just figuring out what the sound is that you want for the game, and then being honest with yourself about have you achieved it or not. I mean, I think that's very, very important for horror games and any games, I guess. So just don't sell yourself short. If it's not quite right, then you just have to put the time in and keep going on it. And like things with the chainsaw and stuff like that. There are times when, I felt like maybe it can be 80% as good as I'd like. Maybe I can live with that, but I wouldn't have been able to live with that. So, you've got to stick with it. Obviously you need to respond to other people's thoughts on the project as well. Like, we had a lot of input from the design team, and just the rest of the team generally would comment. And it's really arrogant and silly not to take those comments on board, even if sometimes people are suggesting solutions that aren't right because they don't really understand the nature of sound design and stuff. If they're mentioning things, then listen to it and think about how you could respond to that. So I think, don't get too insular. Even if you've got a really strong creative vision, just try and take on board other people's thoughts. Generally, if people are saying stuff, even if they don't quite know what it is that they don't like about it, it means that something is wrong and it's worth having a think about it. So I think those two sort of almost juxtaposing things are the key takeaways. Just have a very strong vision for what you want and stick to your guns. But then conversely, listen to people, take on board their thoughts, and you'll expand from doing that. So I think those are two good. Would you add anything to that, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I guess, like, just maybe as an additional thing to wrap up, it might be nice just to impart a bit of learnings from what things have worked. Like, as you mentioned before, we worked on Team Sonic Racing, which is a very different game to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I guess, were there any things that you found were crucial to the sound for a horror game, and anyone working on a horror game?
I think just keeping it vibrant, keeping the sound feeling very organic and very visceral. Primal fear is really key to working on horror games for audio. And we have lots of tools at our disposal for invoking fear. And also not providing people with a comfort blanket. Make sure the music isn't signposting things too much in a way that gives people relief and comfort. Like good horror is always about being harrowing, being unexpected, and really digging into those sort of primal fears. So yeah, use the tools you have to dig that fear out of people and really, really, really scare them.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've achieved that. We've managed to get that. Just one thing to add, I think, is to play test your game a lot. Get people who haven't played it to play it for the first time. Or we did that a lot. We were play testing this game to death. Yeah. To really iron out that experience.
You need to live in the game. You need to play it every day. You can't sort of work in a vacuum away from it. Just make sure you're playtesting your game. Make sure you know every single second of it and that you're living and breathing it during the production of it. Mm. It's definitely, yes, good advice.
Yeah. Cool. I don't think I've got any more questions for you.
It was fun talking through it. I mean, we had so much fun making this game, didn't we? I mean, it's been such a pleasure to play test, even though, I mean, I'm really bad at it. Are you any better? I think we're about the same.
Yeah, I'm not wildly better, if I'm honest. But
I think working on horror as a sound designer and composer is a real dream. Mm. So hopefully that's been useful to people, and enjoy making horror games.